The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
With me is Ria Cherniak-Lebov. She is an artist, writer, musician and the granddaughter of a Holocaust escapee. And she is one of many Jewish people speaking out against what Israel is doing in Gaza and the humanitarian implications of that. Ria, you're very welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Give us just a bit of the family background. I mentioned you're the granddaughter of a Holocaust escapee. Your grandmother escaped from where?
It was my grandfather.
Grandfather, so, my apologies.
Not at all. So my grandfather, Harry Cherniak, came from a town called Konin in Poland. And when I say he's an escapee, I guess that's a nuance. He's not he wasn't a Holocaust survivor because he escaped before the war, so while he still could. But I think 37 members of the Cherniak family perished during the Holocaust, including... yeah, basically, that was another story where he passed away when my mother was only six, and we never knew that he had actually been married with two children before the war. So my mum never knew that she had a brother and sister who died in Auschwitz. So just generationally, it's very close to our family, how recently that our connection to the Holocaust.
Did you grow up entirely in Ireland?
Yeah, I did.
Did you spend any time in Israel, or did your family spend any time in Israel?
Yeah, we did, because my dad is from Tel Aviv. So, yeah, my dad's Israeli, and his family, it's really interesting, I guess. We talk about Israel, and I think that's one of the things I kind of want to add nuance or background and context to is, so his mother was born before the establishment of the state in Israel in British Mandatory Palestine. And yeah, so there was a period where obviously a huge amount of... Palestinians and Jews and Bedouins and Christians were all living fairly harmoniously before it became British Mandatory Palestine. And so I think it's really important to kind of observe the nuance there between Zionism and maybe people who preceded the Zionist movement or when.
Tell me then about what reaction you have had to what has happened in recent months and years in both Gaza and Israel. Because obviously October 7th was one of the most horrific things to have happened to the state of Israel. It was the single biggest killing of Jews since the Holocaust itself. Yeah. It was horrendous beyond measure. And what has followed, an awful lot of people are saying, is grossly disproportionate and a humanitarian shame. What's your view?
My view is that I guess where I'm coming from is that I will never, ever minimize October 7th. I think it was absolutely horrific. And I think there's just this level of intense trauma among Israelis and among the Jewish diaspora, because a lot of Jewish people have family in Israel. It's really very, in a way, very connected. But in another way, I think that I often bring it back to, I think about it in terms of the rise of the far right, because that coalition that were in power before, like, what was it, from 2022, with Bezalel Smotrich and Ben-Gvir, like, they are far right fascists, and they embarked on this expansionist program of trying to take over the West Bank with insane support for illegal settlements and outposts that is completely horrific, and we're seeing that in full swing now. And I feel like it was a perfect storm where you see all of these rising tensions, and you see such gross oppression of Palestinians, both in what they call Israel proper and in Gaza and the West Bank, with the control of goods coming in and out. And there's a huge amount of factors, and I think what I'm always interested in is analysing, maybe from a social politics point of view, why people become radicalised and why there is an intensified leaning towards that kind of violence.
Will the Israelis not say that throughout that period they have lived under the threat of Hamas, of Hezbollah, of the PLO prior to that, that there is an evident desire for them to be snuffed out of existence, the Janssen from the river to the sea, and that all of that necessitates a fairly aggressive response?
I think, again, from my point of view, when you really look back historically, the PLO were obviously vastly more reasonable, and potentially there was a very good case for whether it was a two-state solution or a power share with equity. And the assassination of like Yitzhak Rabin put paid to that. And I think I've said this to people before, like I guess I would have been about 13 when he was assassinated. And at that age, like I couldn't quite compute that it was an ultra-Zionist Jew who had assassinated him and not an Arab, not a Palestinian. And I think like we know that Hamas only have the power that they do because of Netanyahu. Like he has basically funded them and allowed them to grow because he would prefer to have fundamentalists in charge than to have, like he's completely time and again undermined any leadership that would lead to a power share because he's not going to give up any territory. And the end game there now, there was recent proof that he started arming and funding another vigilante group who are going to challenge the power of Hamas because obviously his arrangement is not working anymore. And I think when you're in that position, like...
But regardless of your... Sorry, not yeah. regardless of, but setting aside your views about the current political regime, the yeah. actions taken by the Israelis in Gaza, what is your view on that? What's your view of the current manner in which the war is being fought?
It's absolutely indefensible. You can't commit like a collective punishment. Like, I just think if, for example, we were under a very radical regime and leaders in this regime committed an atrocity like October 7th, if the response was to obliterate every inch of Ireland, I think people would have something to say about that. And you cannot possibly, I think it's the biggest manipulation to imply that there's no innocent civilians in Gaza, because I know lots of Palestinian people who, whether or not they were alive or of voting age when Hamas were elected, or whether they didn't vote for them because they barely scraped a majority. You can't collectively punish an entire civilian population because of the atrocious acts of a group of a terrorist group.
What reaction do you get from your own community when you say things like that? Because were a Gentile to make the assertions that you are making now, the accusation yeah. would come from many quarters of it being egregious anti-Semitism. Obviously, that can't be laid at your door, but I assume a lot of criticism is laid at your door.
Yeah, it is. And I think people have often accused me of giving fodder to anti-Semitism, whereas I really think that we've gotten to a point where, like, I am, like, again, like, I find it deeply problematic. Like, it took me a long time to go to marches. If there are certain chants I'm never going to be on board with. If anybody glorifies violent resistance, I'm not okay with that. I'm a complete pacifist. I'm really only interested in nonviolent resistance. But at the same time, when you look at what happened, let's say, in the Second Intifada, there are so many historical moments where Palestinians have tried peaceful resistance and there's been relentless violence against them. And so even...
But how does your family in Israel, or a family who has grown up or spent time in Israel,
yeah.
how do they react when you say things like that?
I think there's obviously a huge amount of... And I completely empathise. They're like, well, it's all very well and good you living in a safe, distant country passing judgment on us. But I guess at the same time, my empathy is also because I make sure that I read Haaretz and the Jerusalem Post. I read both centre, right, left media from Israel, and I'm aware of what they are aware of. And there's so much bias in their media that I genuinely think that they don't see the same level of violence on their screens. Haaretz even said it was a recent kind of change in tone. So if for people who don't know, Haaretz would be more like The Guardian or something. And there have been photographs in the Israeli media of like, you know, these post-apocalyptic images that we're seeing of blown up buildings. But no, they're not seeing the injured children. And that is very much like have been really peaceful, like hundreds and hundreds of Israelis marching in Tel Aviv, carrying pictures of deceased Palestinian children. And just in an effort to say, like, this is what the human fallout from this is. It's not collateral damage. If they were our children, you would not be able to say, oh, well, this just has to be the way. It doesn't. And I think this constant existential threat that is fed to...
But do you not think it's real, the existential threat?
Well, I think it's very hard to claim that you're defending yourself when you are committing, like, when you're, like, you're the aggressor on pretty much five fronts now. You can't say, like, I just think it's blatant manipulation of language to say we attacked Iran in a preemptive mood. You can't preempt being attacked. If somebody attacks you, yes, you have the right to defend yourself, but you don't get to say that it's a preemptive defense when you're the aggressor.
But what they will say is that there was evidence that there was activity in the nuclear program again. Yeah. The likelihood of where that nuclear program would ever be used, Israel has to be right up at the top of that. Iran has made it clear that it wants Israel to be wiped from the face of the earth. Iran has used its proxies to directly attack Israel before. And therefore, do you wait until they have the capacity to eradicate everybody within your borders, or do you prevent it happening?
I think, to be honest, what I find incredibly hypocritical is the fact that Iran, and I'm again never going to defend their regime, but they have allowed for inspections of their nuclear power and their enriched uranium. And Israel is a nuclear, like it has nuclear weapons, and they refuse to allow inspections. And I don't think that you get to sit there and say, well, it's okay for us to bear nuclear arms and to never declare how many there are and what our intentions are with them, but we get to preemptively attack a country. It just, I think it's so similar to the playbook of the weapons of mass destruction from Iraq. And it's not really surprising that, like, I just think it's also a very, it's a very problematic thing to think that you can attack a country and almost position it like you're freeing the people from their regime. It's not on a Western or an external power to think that they're a savior for a people under a regime.
You mentioned that your view when you read domestic Israeli media is that it gives, to some extent, a bubble, that it's a complete bubble. Are we in a similar position? I've interviewed the Israeli ambassador, and one of the allegations that she makes regularly is that Irish media is biased against Israel. She believes that there is a significant line of anti-Semitism in Ireland. She quotes seeing pro-Hamas flags at events. She sees chants of Hamas. Is she right on any of that?
I think within absolutely any movement, there is going to be a fringe group who... I've been at marches and I have definitely, I would say, less than 5%. I mean, how can you guess a stat like that? But to be honest, when I'm marching, the vast majority of people, like I remember I'm an affiliate of a group called Jews for Palestine Ireland. And when we go to marches, we were sandwiched between like the Union of Social Workers and Health Workers for Palestine. There was not an iota of anti-Semitism there. There's always going to be a fringe group who, but I would also see a correlation between a rise in Islamophobia, a rise in anti-immigration speech. Of course, there's some anti-Semitism, but I think what really skews that was the endorsement of the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism, where if you conflate criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism, that's why, I mean, I think it was in the Jerusalem Post, the question was, is Ireland the most anti-Semitic country in the world? And the answer is, of course it's not, unless you're using the IHRA definition.
Do you as a Jew find Ireland a less welcoming place than it has been because of what's going on, because of the Irish attitude to what's going on?
Towards me, in my personal experience, no. I don't. I think that the thing that I find, which is totally not what I think the Israeli ambassador would consider anti-Semitism. I find it anti-Semitic when people assume I'm pro-Israel because they know I'm Jewish. I actually find that really deeply problematic. And that was actually why I started writing about this. Because I'm also interested, I had an exhibition over in Lithuania and, I went back to do public engagement in February and there was a woman who had invited me to give a lecture, and she invited me to go for a coffee beforehand. And she sat me down and said, I wanted to bring you here to warn you. And I was like, okay. And she went on this absolute monologue of being absolutely pro-Israel. And I just wanted to let you know that this is where our institution is on this. And she said, but some of our young people have other ideas and I don't. She basically was trying to warn me that if the Q&A went a certain way, she was very like almost apologetic if it got very awkward for me, if people start bringing up Netanyahu. And I said politely as I could, oh, no, actually, I'm not a Zionist. And then for a good 5 minutes, she sat there as a Gentile explaining the Holocaust to me and telling me how many Jews were eradicated very complicitly, I might add, in Lithuania. And it's a similar kind of thing that I'm observing with what's happening in Germany, where you've got this like generational shame of how Jews were treated and you think you can fix it by being pro-Israel.
One final thing then, Ria. I can see that as a catalyst for your desire to speak up. Did you have any concerns about speaking up? Because it has to put you in a difficult position with broader family, with broader community.
Yeah.
Is it worth it?
I just think that it's, for me, it's imperative that Jewish people speak up and say, not in our name. This is not to defend us. It's not keeping us safe. And we don't, and there's morality. Like, growing up in a Jewish community, you're taught ethics and you're taught to live your life by a certain moral conduct. And this is not it.
Ria, thank you very much for your time. That is Ria Cherniak-Lebov, artist, writer and musician.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.